Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is a special hour of Your Call. Last summer, the Accrediting Commission for Community and Junior Colleges revoked the accreditation of City College of San Francisco effective July 2014. City and federal officials are now involved in the process of keeping the school open and accredited. CCSF is currently still open and accepting enrollment, although it is down, and credits will still transfer. Just yesterday, San Francisco Supervisor Eric Marr underlined just how important City College is to the economy of San Francisco. The report found that at least $300 million in economic activity would be lost annually if the school were to close. The report also makes clear that the student body, which last year numbered about 80,000, would have no similar options locally. A comparable program in the California State University system would cost $10,000 or more and up to $70,000 a year at private schools. And then late last month, City Attorney Dennis Herrera filed a suit against the Accrediting Commission, accusing them of allowing their personal political bias to affect the evaluation for college accreditation standards. The civil action alleges that the commission acted to withdraw accreditation, quote, in retaliation for City College having embraced and advocated a different vision for California's community colleges than the commission itself, end quote. And Herrera isn't the only one who has found problems with the commission. In response to an appeal filed by the California Federation of Teachers, the Department of Education has found that the commission, out of compliance with its own relegations, included a conflict of interest. The commission president, Barbara Benno's husband, served on one of the teams evaluating City College. Other areas included unclear policies on who should serve on evaluation teams, poor definitions, and undesignated severity levels. Despite all of this, the Department of Education has said it cannot change any decisions by the commission, but their voice, plus Herrera's, may have given legitimacy to the dissenting cry from those opposed to the commission's changes at City College. So on today's Your Call, we're going to talk about what's happening with City College, get an update, and find out about efforts to save it. Today, we're joined by Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez. He's a staff reporter with the San Francisco Bay Guardian. And Joe joins me here in studio. Hi, Joe. Welcome back.
Hi. Nice to see you, Rose.
Nice to see you. We're also joined by Tariq Farrar, Chair of African American Studies and part of the Save CCSF Coalition. And Tariq is also in studio. Hi. Thank you for coming in.
Hi. Good morning.
And we're joined by Larry Kamer, advisor to the State Chancellor of Community Colleges on the CCSF issue. Larry works closely with the special trustee, the mayor's office, and the state chancellor's staff. And Larry joins us from his office in San Francisco. Hi, Larry. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Rose.
Good morning. So, Joe, it's been a little while, a couple months since we had you on. Can you give us an update? Where are we right now when it comes to CCSF?
Well, a lot's really been happening since we last met. Dennis Herrera's office has filed a suit against the Accrediting Commission, the ACCJC, and that's huge. You can't underestimate the importance of that. For a long time, the advocates at City College who were decrying the ACCJC's decision were saying, hey, there's something wrong going on here, and there's something that's not right. And now Dennis Herrera's suit basically outlines every single one of the points these people have been making for the past 2 years that people really haven't been listening to. The other thing is Eric Marr's report. And Eric Marr's report is also huge because there's been a kind of a lack of that groundswell support in San Francisco for the people trying to keep City College alive. And that's really been a problem. Where are the people who are really pushing political muscle to get the mayor to step in, someone to step in?
Well, and for people who do not follow this on a day-to-day basis, the first report that said the accreditation might be in jeopardy came out last year, last summer. And then this year we got the final report saying that City College of San Francisco might lose accreditation and face closure. Can you just quickly go over why did this happen?
Well, the initial report really is more like six or 7 years ago, when the ACCJC did its six-year review of the college. It reviews all community colleges in the state in this manner, and they found some recommendations to be made to fix the college. But at the time, they said they were recommendations. They didn't add this touch of severity, and that's one of the things that the Department of Education's letter against the ACCJC said was a problem, that they didn't say how bad it was. Now, fast forward to 2012, and they go, oh, wow, these recommendations are actually discrepancies that are huge, and we're going to close your college if you don't fix them.
Tariq, what else do we need to know for some background?
One additional thing that's happened over the last several weeks or last couple of months is the State Assembly deciding to audit the ACCJC. And if you read the kind of points that were made in the discussion of the audit, I guess talking points is what what they're called. They also raise all of the issues that the critics of the ACCJC have been raising. This is pretty significant, I think.
Yeah, it's and the commission that he's speaking about is the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, JLAC, in Sacramento, and what they're looking into is the ACCJC's actual practices. Are they behaving the same way as different accrediting agencies in the country? And that's one of the things that the City College advocates have been saying is, hey, these guys are doing something out of the norm. They're being unusually severe, and JLAC is looking into if that's the truth. One of the things I thought was really interesting that was said was one of the the folks who called for the hearing said that Dr. Barbara Bano was one of the most arrogant people that he had talked to in his time in legislature. And that was a red flag for him in terms of the committee, which was
in fact, he
troubling.
Said she was the most arrogant, condescending. And I forget the third word he used. Not one of them, the most. But that's in a certain sense a kind of, I mean, it's kind of satisfying, but it's an aside. Something we have to recognize about the recommendations that were made in 2006, recommendations are simply that. At the time, they were simply that. These were not things that you were required to do. They were things that you might consider doing. So to come back in 2012 and say, hey, you didn't do these things, we're going to put you on show cause, it's inconsistent. Now, as I understand it, the ACCJC subsequently changed their policy to make recommendations, things you had to do, but you can't make it retroactive. To do something like that is it's unethical or unethical, whichever is the school teacher's here, she'll tell me which one is right. It is simply unacceptable.
That is Tariq Farrar, Chair of African American Studies and part of the Save CCSF Coalition. Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez was a student at CCSF. He's a staff reporter with the San Francisco Bay Guardian. And let's go to Larry Kamer. He's advisor to the State Chancellor of Community Colleges on this issue. And Larry, first off, can you tell us what role are you playing in this issue?
I have been involved in the the communications efforts surrounding the accreditation issues since before that report came out last July, primarily advising City College directly, and then starting in July of this year, going to work for the state chancellor. So what my firm does is advise on communications issues, public affairs issues. We have conversations on a daily basis with the state chancellor, the folks at City College, and then other interested parties, including the mayor, legislators, and others.
So, Larry, when you meet people on the street and they say, wait, City College might close? Why? How do you answer that question?
We talk to them about the fundamental and profound structural problems that City College has that jeopardizes its operations and its finances. So even though there is a legitimate conversation to be had about the ACCJC, let's not forget that there's more going on than just what the commission found. We have a lot of documented evidence from another state agency, FICMET, which the college asked to come in and look at its books and operations, and it found severe problems with the way finances are handled, severe problems with the way money is invested, a lack of balance as far as salaries, especially relative to other community colleges in the state, all of which added up to an unsustainable business model that jeopardized the operation of the school and could jeopardize it for 85,000 students in San Francisco.
Well, you know, let's talk a little bit about those. Some of those points were kind of interesting. The idea that the school spends 90%, it's been said, of its budget on salaries and, you know, teachers, faculty, all that. It's really a nexus for a lot of questions we have. City College right now is this battle over two really big ideas. One, that there should be open access for many students, and two, that we should, that as a society, we should pay and compensate our teachers, especially our part-time teachers, fairly. Now, whether that means benefits and the like. I mean, when you see part-time teachers working at three or four different schools, they call them freeway flyers, trying to afford benefits, that doesn't help students. You get teachers who are worn out, teachers who are burnt out. But the way that FICMAT and a variety of the agencies have said City College is spending too much on teachers would have you think is that when you give part-time teachers benefits, you're overspending.
Well, and let me ask you this, Tariq, because you're the chair of African American Studies. How is this affecting teachers?
Well, I mean, obviously, the teachers, employees of CCSF are demoralized. You know, we're frightened. I mean, a point that I make is every day I'm afraid. I wake up every day and I'm afraid because I don't know if I'm going to have a job in a year. You know, despite all of the, you know, alleged money I'm supposed to make, I don't have any wealth. I don't have any stocks, you know, hidden away. I don't have any savings. I don't have a big house. If I lose this job, that's it. And I still have a son who, in fact, is a student at a community college. You know, I mean, he's still getting his stipend from me. So I have to worry about, you know, these kinds of things. Right. I do want to come back to this question of FICMAT report. First off, it's true that they said the school asked FICMAT people to come in. Well, you know, the school has been under interim administration, you know, from the first interim chancellor, Pamela Fisher, that came when the previous chancellor, Don Griffin, left early because he was ill. Subsequent to her, there's been number Scott Skillman. These are interim officials who, in fact, come from outside of the district. So, you know, it's kind of disingenuous to imply that the school as a body asked them to come in. In fact, the administration did. You know,
no, that's not true. The elected board of trustees asked them to come in.
Well, they were a bit under the gun. They were told that if they didn't ask for them.
Well, let me correct that. You are right. I mean, in terms of Pamela Fisher, she in fact was asked by the board of trustees to come in when Don Griffin left. So I accept that correction and I apologize for that. In the case of Thelma Scott Skillman, that came after the special trustee was in place, who in fact. Despite what people might think, the special trustee has had extraordinary powers from the very beginning. The board of trustees, anything the board of trustees decides, in fact, could have been vetoed by the special trustee. So it wasn't that he was in any way impotent. He had quite a bit of power. Now he has more power than that. But I want to come back to this issue of the FITMAC report. FITMAC is brought in to find things that are wrong. You know, that's what its job is, to find things that are wrong. So what you get in a report is weaknesses that it perceives or it sees or it can document in an institution. It's interesting to see how the FITMAT report and the ACCJ report were at times in conflict in the way that the interim administration responded. So, for example, one of the things that the ACCJC pointed out is that there were too few staff, classified staff in the school, which was absolutely right. I mean, a lot of the problems we were having in terms of administration, finance, and so forth had to do with the fact that we did not have enough people working, classified people working in those areas. And the ACCJC's report in 2012 pointed that out. The FITMAC came in and said, well, you have too many people working. You have too large an employee force. You have to reduce that. So what the interim administration then did was lay people off. More than 30 people were laid off. You know, so, you know, counselors were laid off. So on the one hand, we have the Accreditation Commission saying we have too few staff people. And on the other hand, FITMAC comes in and says you have too many. So the response to that was to lay people off, which made the situation worse. It did not make it better.
And on that point, Larry, why were people laid off?
The way Tariq describes it is one way to look at it. I think the other way to look at it is this. The reports also showed that the school was stretched way too thin as far as administrators are concerned. It wasn't just classified staff. You had less than 50 administrators running a school of 85,000 people, and no one can do a job well when they're doing two and three jobs, whether they're in administration or classified, or as Joe points out, teaching at two or three different schools. It's tough. But the point was that it was unsustainably expensive to run the school as it was, and that's really the core issue here. You know, you can talk all about inconsistencies between FICMAT and ACCJC. You can talk about ACCJC policies and so on. The way we look at it is we have a patient on the operating table in the emergency room, and our job is to save that patient. Others may want to debate who owns the hospital or what national health care policy is about. Those are important debates, but we have between now and July the obligation to try and save City College and get it turned around and get its accreditation.
Is it really that dire?
Yes, it is.
Well, the ACCJC, they can and they will close the school in July if these requirements aren't met, or the lawsuit is successful and they turn around the decision. But
yeah,
that's really the heart of it, though, is that patient on the table, there's a real discussion about how to save that patient on the table. It's not just about the administration of the hospital. It's about, are we going to amputate his arm? Are we going to amputate his leg? Or are we going to spend more money and get him more medicine so that we can keep him alive without having to amputate? And that's what we're really talking about, is do we cut off some vital parts.
You know, that's such an excellent point. I often thought about this notion of reducing the size, so to speak, or reducing the cost of CCSF. If we assume that CCSF, which I don't, is too big and it has to get smaller, right? You know, if someone needs to lose weight, do you put them on a diet and gradually reduce their weight? Do you cut off their arm, you know, or you cut off a leg? And I think the way that the interim administration has gone about this is the latter rather than the former. And as far as, you know, this issue of, you know, well, we had to reduce the size of the classified staff because there weren't enough administrators. We have to increase the size of the classified staff now. So if in fact classified people and others had not been laid off in the first place, we wouldn't be facing the problem we're facing now of not having enough classified staff and trying to rehire those people. I agree that there were not enough administrators, and that's something that was very clear. You had deans that were doing two or three, you know, that were holding, they're doing two or three different jobs, quite literally, but we didn't have money to hire people. There were a lot of interim deans, and that's one of the things that the ACCJC criticized CCSF for. But again, let's look at what the administration did. When they put out their advert, first off, they gave all of the deans that were there pink slips, right? All of them had to reapply for their positions. Now, we didn't have enough administrators to begin with. So what do? You fire all the administrators, the deans that are there. But they could, in fact, reapply. The first job announcement that went out asked for, it encouraged retired administrators to apply, and indicated that they would be looking at a 2-year working at the school for 2 years. So effectively, what you're doing is hiring interim administrators. When the ACCJC criticized the school for having too many interim administrators. Now, I can go on and give example after example after example of this type of practice. This does not suggest that the people involved in this had a very good vision or a very clear understanding of what exactly it was they wanted to accomplish. Because they would engage in acts that were quite contradictory to the needs of the school, and even contradictory to the recommendations or the weaknesses that the ACCJC report pointed to.
And that is Tariq Farrar, part of the Save CCSF Coalition. Larry, as advisor to the state chancellor, do you want to respond to what Tariq just said?
Sure. And I think, look, you can look back, and I think I've created a monster here by talking about our patient on the operating table analogy, but, you know, what I'm trying to suggest is the urgency of our task, the task of the current administration, the state chancellor, and the special trustee. And yeah, if you have a patient with a bad heart on the table, are you going to argue that it's his fault, he shouldn't have eaten so much or smoked? Yes, sir, you know, you could, but the issue is that we have an instant problem in saving that, saving this institution's very being. If you go back, there are very specific things that we have done and that continue to have to be done to pull the college away from fiscal and operational brink that it's on and keep its accreditation. What we've done is laid out every single one of those tasks, and there are several hundred of them, on the CCSFforward.com website. A real clear kind of infographic letting people know exactly what those specific things are that the Accreditation Commission is requiring, where we are on turning those situations around, where we've had success, and what's been done. And I don't want to just suggest that this is administration only. This has been done through the work of constituencies and communities across City College, faculty, staff, labor, administrators, students, and, you know, and that's the only way it's going to get done is by pulling together and focusing on the problem at hand.
And we're going to go to break in a couple minutes, but before we do that, I just want to I want to welcome Peter Lauterborn from San Francisco Supervisor Eric Marr's office. He's coming on to talk about the study that was just conducted. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Before we talk about the study, what does the conversation sound like at City Hall about what's happening with CCSF and a possible closure?
Well, it's a conversation that's all about deep concern. There's not a single member of the Board of Supervisors or any one of the many city departments that we've engaged with that doesn't take this crisis extremely seriously. And so one step we wanted to take was to make sure that there was a full conversation, a full range of understanding as to what City College really provides, and that's why we went forward with this economic impact study, which we presented yesterday.
And so this report was completed by the Budget Analyst's Office at the request of Supervisor Eric Marr.
Correct.
And what did it find?
Well, it found a lot. It gets into at least a base understanding of $300 million in economic activity a year. And that's really just looking at mostly local tuition, state and federal funds. So it really only scratches the surface, but it also talks about how many students are dependent on these non-credit courses to ensure that students of all ages really have the opportunity to learn English, are able to take the courses they need to get towards their GED. And so it's very, very broad what this finds, and it really also shows that there's nowhere else for these students to go. There's no capacity at other local community colleges. Private institutions are prohibitively expensive. And it really codified how important it is to keep this school open and keep it in a model that's really our city college, that keeps it in the state that we really appreciate it while fixing what needs to be fixed.
Right, because again, we're talking about 85,000 students, and even a lot of students now can't afford to go to community college. We're going to go to break soon, Joe, but how much is it these days to go to community college?
$46 a unit. It's a statewide fee controlled by the state, and the schools can't raise or lower that individually.
So let's say you're taking a full load, and your ultimate goal is to go to UC Berkeley. How much would that cost a year?
Oh, geez. I mean, you're saving so many thousands by going to City College, and that's actually laid out in Eric Marr, in the report that Eric Marr asked for. You're paying $2,000 to $3,000 more a year if you're going to a CSU.
All right.
At least.
And then when we come back after break, we'll also just talk about the number of students enrolled who do not have a high school diploma, students studying English as a second language. Today we are talking about the future of City College of San Francisco on this special hour of Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and we're joined by Peter Lauterborn with Supervisor Eric Marr's office, Joe Fitzgerald, reporter with The Bay Guardian, Tariq Farrar, part of Save CCSF Coalition, and Larry Kamer, advisor to the State Chancellor of Community Colleges on CCSF. And we'll be back after this.
I'm Matt Martin, General Manager of KALW, here with Becca Hoekstra, as a producer for Your Call and also a City College graduate, asking for your support. We are in the final hours of our fall membership campaign. Your support makes everything here at KALW possible, including the no-interruption approach to fundraising that we have innovated and you have supported. The number to call, 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917.
KALW is one of the few outlets that has been fairly following the issue at CCSF at the beginning, and these local community issues are so important to be able to get out to people. And it's strong local media outlets like KALW that have the capacity to cover this, that need the capacity to cover these issues.
Your support makes that happen when you call or click 800-525-9917. We need the information. We need the conversation. We create it together. 800-525-9917.
We're asking you in these very last days of our fund drive to give you your support in order to be able to continue funding this type of reporting. You can give us a call at 1-800-525-9917.
Or you can go online to kalw.org. This is a station that is committed to reporting on education, committed to educating young talents in media. That is what your support makes possible. Thanks to Julie Montrond in Berkeley, Scott Collier in Sausalito, Bridget Clinton in San Francisco, all people who in this hour have given their support to KALW. If you've been waiting, if you appreciate this kind of programming, give your support now. We have an open line at 800-525-9917 or kalw.org. That's where Daniel Opperman in Daly City went to give his support. Matt Oha in Half Moon Bay also supporting KALW. 800-525-9917. Now, back to Rose.
This is Your Call, a special edition of Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this hour we are talking about the future of City College of San Francisco. We've done a lot of shows about this, about the fact that they have lost their accreditation status. So what's in store for the school? What are efforts to save it? What changes need to be made? What's working? We'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions about CCSF, personal stories, I know so many of you are personally connected to the school. So if you'd like to talk about your personal story. I mean, the sad thing is that enrollment is actually down because a lot of people are unclear about what this actually means. So again, Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez with the San Francisco Bay Guardian, all of the classes will still transfer, right? Just to make that clear.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, yes. All the classes will still transfer no matter what happens to City College in the future.
Okay. So if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez. He went to CCSF. He's a staff reporter with the San Francisco Bay Guardian. Tariq Farrar is chair of African American Studies and part of the Save CCSF Coalition. Larry Kamer is involved in communications, advisor to the state chancellor of community colleges on this issue. He works closely with the special trustee, the mayor's office, and the state chancellor's staff. And Peter Lauterborn is with Supervisor Eric Marr's office in San Francisco. And Peter, before we let you go, we were talking about this report completed by the Budget Analyst's Office at the request of Supervisor Marr, and it found that if City College of San Francisco is shut down, at least $300 million in economic activity would be lost annually. Some other really interesting stats. There were 5,000 students enrolled in the spring semester who did not have a high school diploma, and each of these students would lose about $8,800 in annual earnings by failing to obtain an associate degree from CCSF.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stories like that. 45% of CCSF students are actually enrolled in non-credit courses that really do some of this basic education work that's such a gateway to so many people. There are about 10,000 students at CCSF over the age of 50 years old. 50 years of age or older, taking non-credit courses. There are over 26,000 non-credit students enrolled in non-credit courses on either English language students or taking other languages, including sign language. Academic guidance, tutoring, and work experience, there's 12,000 non-credit courses. And going back to this idea of English language learners, somebody who often adults who are able to learn English, their earnings are even more than those with the GED. If someone's able to learn English later in life, they can earn $13,500 more per year on average. And so it's a massive gateway. And as we were saying, none of the other community colleges nearby can hold these students. The private, especially the for-profit colleges, I mean, some of these two-year programs would cost 17 times more than you get at City College. and often have predatory lending practices and other challenges. And so a real big economic impact for the people who need this education the most.
It was interesting because when we did a show at City College, I met a number of students who graduated from UC schools who were going back to City College for a number of reasons. A lot of them simply can't find jobs. But City College is full of UC grads also.
Yes. The point I was making to you during the break was that, the coordinator of the biotech program at CCSF, we're talking about this issue, and, she made the point to me that about half of the students that come into her program are graduates of UC Berkeley with biology degrees, but they don't have the practical experience. They can't get jobs because they don't have the practical experience that they could get at CCSF. So any changes, any policies that would eliminate people like that because they already have degrees, or people who are in non-credit programs, there's a material cost for this. People like to talk about dollars and cents. We can't afford this anymore. It's too expensive. Well, it's too expensive not to have these programs, and that's the point that's missed. Every dollar that's invested in CCSF is returned, many, many fold. I could sit here until tomorrow morning and talk about the ways in which CCSF benefits the city of San Francisco, the Bay Area, the state of California, the country. And that's part of the story that's being lost. And all of this talk of money and difficulties in administration, which are real. The important story is missing. That CCSF does its job excellently. It is one of the best community colleges in the country. It's been recognized as such by the New York Times, by the MetLife Foundation. Recognized as such. It's at the top tier of community colleges in the state when it comes to transfer students. And in fact, in general, community colleges in the state do excellent job educating the students. Students who leave community colleges in this state and go into four-year schools outperform students who entered the four-year schools as freshmen. And CCSF is at the top of that, fact. So if in fact we're doing what we do, we're performing our primary mission so well, then why is it that we find ourselves threatened with loss of accreditation? The question I always ask is that if everything that the ACCJC says is true about CCSF, now I'll take issue with that, but let's assume that it is. What is there any reason to close the school? Would San Francisco be better off if the school was closed? Would the Bay Area be better off? Would the state be better off? And if not, then what's the rush? There were 14 weaknesses that were pointed to a year ago that had to be solved. We had 9 months to solve them in. And because we could not do that, then we're told, now you're going to lose accreditation. This is madness. We're sitting here talking calmly like this is some, talking about something reasonable and rational. And this is absolute madness to threaten to close a school that is such a vital resource to this, the Bay Area, to the state, to threaten to close this on the basis upon which this threat is being made. And we can't lose sight of that.
Well, what's interesting is how much City College has been standing up for the city is actually what's getting it into trouble, right? The Accrediting Commission is really set up to look at, are you transferring, how are your financials, all this stuff. But City College, lost a lot of financial standing by shouldering a lot of these non-credit classes that we were talking about. And to specify, non-credit classes are classes that don't transfer to UCs or CSUs. They're mainly like career training or maybe kind of a life learning classes. But, CCSF said, all right, the state's defunding them. Well, heck, we're going to carry them on our shoulders and we'll take the hit because San Francisco needs this. The ESL learners need this. Mm-hmm. The city needs this. But because they took that financial hit defending these classes for San Francisco, the ACCJC dinged them and FICMAT dinged them.
And this is part of why Supervisor Marr did introduce this budget legislative analyst request, is to say, to the point of we can't afford to not have it. And San Franciscans know this. San Franciscans voted overwhelmingly to support Proposition A last year to provide extra money to the school so it could keep doing what it does so well. I think what's often lost in all of this is that there's very little criticism, if any, of the actual quality of the education. And so to threaten that education because of administrative challenges, which have legitimacy in many cases. But to threaten the education and to point out the burden of these non-credit courses is really bewildering. You know, you
Part
have of students who are 50 and older. 16 there are 1,600 of them without a high school who never graduated high school. You know, I mean, these are the kinds of things that the college is serving and that San Francisco appreciates about the college.
Peter, what can citizens do at this point to ensure that City College does not close?
I mean, there's a few actions. I mean, the number one that we keep hearing is that, you know, the school is open. Take a class. Help it. Yeah, you know, that helps bring in state funding. And you'll learn also about how wonderful it is. I took an Excel course there. Fantastically helpful in many of the things I work on. So that's the first thing. Find something that you're interested in. Take advantage of what the school is offering today, and that'll help it stay afloat. Second, write your supervisor, write the mayor's office, make sure, write your state assembly members and state senators. Let them know that this college is important to you and that what it does for San Francisco today, what makes it our college, what makes it so unique and so valuable, is worth fighting for and worth preserving.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Peter.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
That is Peter Lauterborn. He is with San Francisco Supervisor Eric Marr's office. And again, a new report just came out, completed by the Budget Analyst's Office at the request of Supervisor Marr, looking at how a possible closure of the college would affect, in fact, bruise San Francisco's economy and negatively impact so many people, older people, people who are learning English as a second language, you name it. But we'll put a link to this report on our website right after the show. And we're joined by Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez, staff reporter with the San Francisco Bay Guardian, Tariq Farrar, chair of African American Studies and part of the Save CCSF Coalition, and Larry Kamer, advisor to the state chancellor of community colleges on this issue. And I'm Rose Aguilar. It's a special edition of Your Call, and we're talking about what's in store for the future of CCSF. And we're going to go to our next guest in a minute, but quickly, we have an email from Nick in San Francisco. And Larry, he says, can you please tell me what is supposedly wrong with CCSF? A lot of people right. say they still don't get it.
Well, it's what's happened over a number of years, and the school has gotten into what I guess can only be called a number of bad habits that have not been corrected and have all come to a head now, as been pointed out by the Accreditation Commission and FICMAT and others who have looked at this, like the state chancellor. Everything we've been talking about in the last 10 minutes is kind of music to my ears, because it speaks to the urgency of the task at hand, which is fixing what ails City College so that it can be there to continue to serve 85,000 students. We see what's at stake as, look, you've got 85,000 people who, many of whom can't go anywhere else, and every one of them has a story, an important story of why City College matters to them. We're a large employer in San Francisco. Several thousand people would lose their jobs if City College were to fail. What Supervisor Marr's, the report he brought forward, talks about only scratches the surface of the impact City College's failure would have on our workforce in San Francisco, in the most vital professions that are powering the economy, in healthcare, in information technology, in culinary and tourism, in biotech, among others, at which we do, and the college does an excellent job. Not to mention the fact that it's an institution with its own financial obligations, and those would all have to be dealt with. So it just brings home the urgency of fixing these problems, keeping the accreditation, and making City College a more sustainable organization so that all of these good things can continue to happen.
I also wanted to talk about some of the issues with the Accrediting Commission itself. And to talk about that, we are joined by Sarah Eisenberg. She's Deputy City Attorney with City Attorney Dennis Herrera's office. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. So last month, City Attorney Dennis Herrera filed a suit against the commission, accusing commissioners of allowing their personal political bias to affect the evaluation for college accreditation standards. Can you tell us about this lawsuit and why was it filed?
So it was filed for several reasons. Primarily, we are hoping to prevent the closure of City College, which, as you've all been talking about, is such an important and cherished institution here in San Francisco, and also to ensure that they can retain the depth and the breadth of the classes and the services that are offered there. But the issues really go, as we see it, beyond just City College, and there are serious problems with the accreditation agency, with the ACCJC. And so we also want to ensure that all community colleges in California are able to get an impartial evaluation that complies with all of the laws so that community colleges can continue to thrive throughout the state.
And so what was the main problem exactly?
Well, there were several problems with the ACCJC's evaluation of City College that exemplified some of these issues. They were in violation of several federal regulations, as the Department of Education recently found. There were conflicts of interest that abounded throughout the process. Most particularly, there is a reason that judges are not advocates and that advocates are not judges. And the ACCJC, which is supposed to be an impartial evaluating agency, was engaged in an intense political heated fight over the proper vision and mission of the community colleges in California. And at the same time that they were doing that and taking a position opposed to the position that was very strenuously advocated by City College, they were also evaluating City College. And we believe there is evidence that those political advocacy and their political views influenced their ultimate decision.
And again, that's Sarah Eisenberg, Deputy City Attorney with Dennis Herrera's office. Larry Kamer, Advisor to the State Chancellor of Community Colleges. What about these conflicts of interest?
Well, you have two levels of complaint coming from the City Attorney's office. One is against the ACCJC, which came in the form of essentially a lawsuit, and one was an administrative complaint filed against the State Chancellor's office. I can only speak to the second. It contained a number of, it painted a picture that wasn't exactly accurate with regard to the state chancellor's role in accreditation and suggesting somehow that the state chancellor had ceded authority for accreditation to the ACCJC. The state chancellor has never been involved in the business of accrediting colleges. That's always been the role of third-party, independent, peer-review organizations like the ACCJC. So that's a bit of a misimpression created by this action.
Okay, if I may?
I just want to go point by point, Larry, because I want to make sure we don't lose anyone, and this stuff is really important. Mm-hmm. Joe, you wanted to respond?
Well, if I may, the Board of Governors doesn't have an active role in accreditation necessarily, but the State Chancellor's Office has taken actions against the ACCJC in the past. Previous State Chancellor Jack Scott wrote a letter to the Department of Education complaining actively about the severity of the ACCJC's rulings in the past. I mean, so they definitely have taken an active role with the ACCJC before, and these folks are saying that, well, they're not doing it now.
And Sarah, how would you respond to what Larry just said?
Yeah, I think it's a subtle but important distinction that while it's true that the Chancellor's Office doesn't have a direct role in accreditation, the Board of Governors was charged with setting the minimum standards for state aid, and they set that standard to be accreditation by the ACCJC, such that a loss of accreditation would essentially automatically result in an end to state funding. And we think that the Board of Governors has a role to play in ensuring that those decisions, therefore, are fair and are reviewable by a publicly accountable agency. That said, we are waiting for a response from the Chancellor's office to our administrative petition, and we expect to receive that in early October, and we are looking forward to seeing what they have to say.
And that's a big problem with the ACCJC right now that people are finding, is that it is a private entity. It is not subject to public records laws in California or federal public records laws. So when you have advocates, when you have journalists like myself and at the Chronicle, when you have lawyers trying to see documents from the ACCJC and verify that what they're doing is correct, what they're doing follows their own regulations, what they're doing is right, you can't check them because they won't let you see the documents. They even are stopping the City College from releasing their own documents. And City College is subject to California Public Records Act laws, and they just sent me, and I'm sure the Chronicle as well, a letter on the 14th saying, oh, sorry, we can't give you these public records because the ACCJC told us that we can't.
Well, we invited them to join the show today, and they declined. Sarah, have you been able to get any of these documents?
We have not yet. We have just started the lawsuit, so we've just instituted discovery. We don't know yet what documents we will get, and we don't know yet what documents we'll be able to share, but we are certainly hopeful that we will be able to get access to certainly more than has been made available to the public to date.
All right. And then, Larry, did you want to finish your thought before we let Sarah go?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think there's a really important distinction, I think, that we have to make between the discussion that's happening about the ACCJC and accreditation, which, as Joe points out, the state chancellor has been involved with. The current state chancellor has a task force looking at this. What we're saying is that's a debate that probably needs to happen and needs to happen away from City College. City College just does not have the resources to fight a two-front war and get dragged into the distraction of all of these legal issues that are flying around. So that's the first point. The second point is, I think we would be doing a great disservice to all of the people who have done so much work to turn this college around in the last year if we didn't point out that we are making great progress on developing and achieving a clear roadmap, getting close to hiring a permanent chancellor, making key personnel decisions and hires, including in some of the more critical fiscal areas, looking at what it actually costs to run that institution center by center, and doing something that's gotten a little bit of press, which is starting to collect fees, which was one of the practices that City College was not very good at for a number of years. So let's also focus on what has been done and what has to be done there on the ground, at the operational level at City College in order to save it.
And I actually have to let Sarah go. So, Sarah, do you want to respond to that? And then also, we just got a caller, Ellen in San Francisco, who says she still cannot understand what is wrong with CCSF. How do you answer that question?
How do I? Well, first let me respond to what was just said. So I think, first of all, it's important to remember that City Attorney Dennis Herrera does not represent City College. He's acting in this lawsuit as a public prosecutor empowered to act on behalf of the people of the state of California to prevent unfair business practices that we believe the ACCJC has engaged in. As he also said when he announced these cases, nothing about the actions that he's filed should distract or delay City College of San Francisco and the Chancellor's Office from doing everything in their power to solve the problems that are threatening its survival. But ultimately, City College and all the community colleges in California are entitled to a fair shake. They're entitled to evaluation by a truly impartial agency that's conducted in compliance with the law, and that is what this lawsuit is really trying to ensure.
And we just got another email from someone who says, I'm frustrated because I still don't know what's wrong with CCSF. How would you respond to that, Sarah?
I would find it difficult to respond to that. I think that's really a question that we need to get more clarity on from the ACCJC. They identified certain problems with respect to the fiscal situation, although, as somebody mentioned earlier, we just passed Prop A, which got a lot of funding for City College. It is not entirely clear from the reports exactly what the problems are, but it's clear that City College is doing a tremendous service for the city of San Francisco and that it does a tremendous job educating students. And so I don't know that I'm the proper person to answer what the problems are at City College. I think we just all need to try to make sure that it is able to continue doing the things that it's doing well.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That is Sarah Eisenberg. She's deputy city attorney with Dennis Herrera's office.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A point I'd like to make is that over the last year, people at CCSF, staff, faculty, we worked very hard. We worked, as my colleagues have said, incredibly hard to try and address the issues that the school was facing. Now, most of those issues were things that, you know, the faculty and staff, you know, that we had no hand in. They were mostly administrative and financial. Those things that, and I can speak for faculty, those things that faculty had to address, primarily student learning outcomes, we did an amazing job. In fact, the visiting team that came back in April, when they, you know, when they sat through the presentation that Katrin Weiss, who on her own took over the issue of SLOs. I mean, she set up a website. She set up this program. And by the way, didn't ask for a dime. You know, they keep talking about the money that we, faculty cost. You know, she set up this amazing structure for doing, for completing SLOs. And we worked very hard. And in fact, that visiting team recognized that when she got through with her presentation, they stood up, and they said, this is a model for the entire state. Now, when the ACCJC sent back their report, they claimed that we had not done enough. It's these kinds of inconsistencies that are so enraging.
Mm. You know, unfortunately, we only have a minute left, and I just wanted you to respond to that, Larry. There's obviously some frustration from Tariq. A lot of our listeners still do not understand what is wrong with CCSF.
Yeah, and I'm kind of surprised that it's not obvious after the events of the last year and a half. That City College is way out of balance as far as the money it takes in and the money it spends. I mean, as an institution, it's a taxpayer-funded institution that spends decidedly more on salaries, benefits, and retirement than any other community college in California. It's one, something like 92% when they looked at it in the ACCJC report and in the FICNAC. What that means is only 8% of the money is available for things like keeping classrooms in shape,
Larry,
technology.
Larry, I'm on a really tight schedule today, so I'm going to have to cut you off. I'm sorry about that. But we will definitely continue to follow this issue, and I'm going to ask Joe after the show what's next in terms of dates, and we will definitely have another show on this. Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez, staff reporter with the Bay Guardian, Tariq Farrar, part of the Save CCSF Coalition, and Larry Kamer, advisor to the state chancellor of community colleges. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar.
And I'm Matt Martin, general manager of KALW. As we wrap up both this special hour on the City College of San Francisco and our fall membership campaign here at KALW, in 6 hours, we will no longer be asking for your support here at KALW until next May. Everything here at this station is made possible by listeners. And just in this hour, Judy Levy in Mountain View, Holly Beal in Oakland, who says she loves the local programming, James Brown in El Cerrito, Jack Murray in San Francisco, and a new member, Daniel Mandel in Oakland, gave their support to local public radio. Be part of this flow of support for local independent media we're having today at KALW. 800-525-9917.
Thank you so much for your support. It's been such a great morning. 800-525-9917 or online, kalw.org. Keep this vital resource strong and independent so we can have these real conversations about what is happening with education. We had Diane Ravitch on earlier talking about the privatization of education, and now we're talking about CCSF, and we've been on this from the start. That's the kind of media that you're supporting by calling 800-525-9917 or online kalw.org.
This is a thoughtful, real conversation about a critical local institution. This is why we need local media. This is why we need a place where there's an open forum where you can hear that dialogue. I mean, we have great reporters like Joe, who's just on the program, providing valuable information, but there's nothing like hearing the voices, talking to one another, the people who are in the middle of the story, and taking your calls. 800-525-9917. Thanks to the people who are on the line right now. We do have an open line. Be the next person to call or click.
800-525-9917 or online, kalw.org. Our producer of the show today, Becca Hoekstra, thank you, Becca, actually went to CCSF. We found her there. That's what's so great about community radio. Creating community, literally, 800-525-9917. We had a great morning. Thank you so much. We have one open line, it looks like, 800-525-9917. This is the last time that you can pledge for your call. 100% of our budget comes directly from you. KALW.org or 800-525-9917.
800-525-9917 here on KALW San Francisco. Thanks for your support.